Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the show, and what a beautiful Monday it is, April 10th, 2017, and we're here in the studio in LA. Beautiful day.
Gorgeous.
How can you not love weather like this, folks?
Yesterday, I felt like I was in like a hologram,
right?
Holodeck on Star Trek, and it was just like, put in the perfect day. I mean, yeah. It could not be nicer.
I know. Blue sky, 75 degrees.
God, gorgeous.
Yeah. So we're lucky to live here, I think, you know, or smart for having moved here.
It could be that we're just really smart.
Right.
Right. Like, yeah.
But you know what? I started thinking, though, that I don't know why sometimes I get on these kicks of starting to worry about earthquakes.
Mm.
And I thought to myself, you know, it's like here I go freely up and down elevators. I don't mean to scare anybody, but you know what? If there's an earthquake and you're stuck there, you're the last one they're going to care about. You know what I'm saying? How the fuck do you get out of there? You know, so I don't know, man. That kind of scares me. But a lot of things scare me because you could be stuck in a high-rise building, you know. So it's better not to think about
it.
What do you
think? Or you could be stuck in your house and you're safe and you're okay. Like the chance, you know.
Right.
You don't know. The thing is, California is, there's always a chance in California. But here's what I say. There's a chance in the middle of Massachusetts, you could get hit by a tree. I mean, there's always a chance.
That's true.
However, yeah, the big one might probably hit soon, and we might float off into the, you know.
Yeah, I don't
Pacific,
know what's
going to
happen, but it is scary.
That's
even
why
if it's
I'm worried about people.
One.
The people in the Hollywood Hills. I love the view, but man, if you guys have ever been in the Hollywood Hills, you literally go up a one lane curvy road way into the hills. They have gorgeous views, but if there's an evacuation, they are stuck.
Yeah, and the houses are on stilts.
Right,
many
they're on
of them.
Stilts, and it's like the mudslides would hit that, and then you can't get out because it's like the traffic would just be completely blocked.
Right.
So I don't think I can't handle that.
So there's too many places where you wouldn't. The safest place, folks, stay at home, and just so you can run outside if something happens. You know.
Right. And then I was like, get into the bathtub, but I think that's a tornado.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure that's a tornado.
Yeah.
So that if the tornado hits the house, you're in the heaviest thing.
Oh, you mean in the bathtub?
Yeah.
Okay, but empty.
Not, yeah, empty.
Oh.
Yeah, don't take a bath.
I'm like, what is she talking about?
That would be, although if you joking, worried, yeah. Maybe the bath would come.
Yeah, right.
It's very funny.
Wow.
Put some Epsom salts, make some bubbles, enjoy your night. No, that's, yeah, you want to be so not around.
Maybe we better not think about these things.
Yeah, so we'll move on.
Yeah. So anyway, beautiful weekend. I've got some family in town and stuff, and that's always fun. You know how family, you don't get to choose, you know?
Hashtag you don't get to choose. It's so true.
You're born into it.
You are.
And, you know, it's interesting situations sometimes.
How's it going?
I love my family, you know, but like aunts, uncles, things like
cousins.
That are into town. Yeah, cousins. But I don't know. So, you know, when you're away from them, you stop relating to them after a while, you know?
You know, people change and they go
They really do.
They do. So my Buddhist teacher says for people going to see their family or spend time with their family, she's like, do it for like 10 minutes at a time.
Yeah, right.
Because she's like, don't try and do it so much all at once. Try and have a really good 10 minutes.
Right.
And then maybe take a break.
Exactly.
So that's what I try to do. But my family and I were like uber close.
Right.
But like close into like the enmeshed world where I'm calling my mom all the time.
Yeah.
And that also gets messy because she's
but
your mom.
But mom is fine.
Yeah.
But right. With uncles and aunts though, you know.
I have very small. I have a cool hippie beekeeper of an aunt who's also a bird watcher.
And, wow.
Yeah. So I have hippie family.
Yeah. I've got a huge family.
Yeah.
But,
very small.
But yeah. So. But most of them are, what can I say? I don't know. I can't even make a generalization.
Is there like an adjective? Is it complicated?
No, I don't think I can really generalize about all of them. They're each individual in their own right. But the bottom line is, I guess they always look at you as the little kid, you know, and then you move away.
Yeah, you're always that kid.
I told my aunt, I said, I'm 57
years old. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they're always going to see you as that other
kid.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, you're stunted.
And she's only 6 years older than I am.
Yeah.
So give me a break.
That's funny.
And so that's the situation there, and it's funny, but it gets me thinking a lot, you know, about people in general.
Yeah, families are tough. And so, like, Pema, I was just listening to Pema about families. It's so funny you said that, because my mom is actually, working on stuff with my sister. We're all trying to help each other out and be better at it. And Pema was talking about families, and she says, if you're really trying to work on Buddhism and you're starting off trying to meditate and stuff, don't start with the family. Okay. It's very charged, and there's just so much emotion.
She's like,
start with somebody a little more neutral.
Right, that you don't care about as much.
Yeah, right. There's not as much a dynamic there of feelings, right? So I thought that was a smart idea.
Yeah, right.
So I'm meditating on, like, the traffic cop I pass, or, like, you know, someone else. But families are charged, man.
Yeah, that's true. It really is.
Yeah.
We're going to have a guest calling in a few minutes, a judge or former judge. I guess once you're a judge, you're always a judge, right?
Oh, yeah.
So we'll refer to him by judge.
Your Honor. I've always wanted to say that. Oh, my God.
Oh, wow.
Your Honor. Objection, Your Honor. Say it all like that and then rip off my blazer for some reason.
I'm telling you, right? Wow.
I really should have been a lawyer. I'm so sad I wasn't. But
really?
It's
never too late.
I know. I could go, but here's the thing. Mm. And my father is a very wonderful, prominent attorney. And I was always supposed to be the protege. Mm. And I am obsessed with the Constitution, and I know cases. I can cite Supreme Court cases. I'm a nerd in that way. But I don't feel like I wouldn't feel comfortable being the person's representative to being in jail or not. It's too much.
Right, right.
It's too much. And, like, my dad does contract law, so he does more, like, creating mergers and bringing people together. But I would want to be litigation, because that's where the drama is, you know?
Right,
you're on the stage. Ladies and gentlemen, the jury.
Trenches, you know? I mean, that's
what I would want. But I want to look at the guy. That's who did it. But then the fate rests in my hands.
That's true.
And I'm kind of just, I can't do that.
Too much responsibility.
Way too much responsibility. Oh, my God. Way
but that's
too
the
much.
Thing. You don't have to do that kind of law. I mean, there's a lot of really exciting law, like cyber laws and things like that.
Yeah, no, that's true.
That could be fascinating. Fascinating,
true,
you know?
True.
You could get into, like, hacking and all this kind of stuff, which is, I think, pretty interesting. I think also copyright and trademark things sometimes.
But, you know, for me, though, it's got to be.
Right.
Like, I literally want to pull out of it. Like, ladies and gentlemen, the jury, evidence number 5. And no one's seen it. And it's like, like, I need it to be like that.
Yeah.
It's so stupid.
You watch too much TV.
No, I just, I know. But I've also read, like, beautiful dissertations and beautiful, you know, dissents from justices, and they can be, like, mind-blowingly beautiful.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And I just always wanted that drama, and I just can't do the responsibility thing.
Wow.
Isn't that funny?
So I tell you what, why don't you write a script with you as a lawyer that does that? You know, and you'll get to do it, actually. You know, think about that.
Yeah.
Yeah, make it happen for yourself. And the thing is this, look, it's never too late. You're in your 30s. How long would it take you to get a law degree?
3 years.
3 years, right?
Yeah.
That's not a long time, really.
No.
You know, but then you have to study
part-time. And then take the bar and then get an associate's degree.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
But let's say you did it part-time and stuff. But still, I mean, in your 40s, you could be a successful lawyer. So think about that. You know, it's something if you want to do. You can change careers. You can do a couple things. Try as much as you can in the direction you already are.
And I could use the word Esquire after my name. That would be cool.
Wow. Yeah. There you go, you know?
Yeah. That's cool. I like it. Victoria Shulman Esquire.
Now, does every judge get to have Esquire in their...
Every lawyer.
Every lawyer?
Yeah, Esquire. But, I mean, no one uses it.
Yeah, I know.
Esquire. Or
except
JD.
For the people with their PhDs and doctor this and doctor that.
I know.
Like, doctor used to be a physician, you know?
Well, if you study enough, apparently you can also be a doctor.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
Doctor of bullshit.
Hey, maybe they're very good at philosophy.
Yeah, right?
There you go.
Yeah. So, yeah, amazing things in the world. Great time to be alive, you know. But I guess at the same breath, I'm going to bring up the explosion in Egypt, the bombing. But I guess it's for some people, it's not a great time to be alive. But a church was bombed by people claiming to be with ISIS, right?
Yeah.
So that's against Christians. So everybody's a victim, I guess. I don't know what the hell.
And it's funny because, like, ISIS is it's like kind of like unclear as to what they're. Are they just against anyone that's not them? Like, I'm unclear on their message. Is it just anyone that's not them?
Yes.
So it's just like, okay.
Anybody who's not Muslim deserves
to
die.
Or radical or jihadists. I mean, they really want you to be.
Well, not necessarily. I mean, you'll look, and we were talking.
They
about
would never hit a mosque.
But
saying.
In the Quran, it definitely says that if someone is not, even if someone leaves Islam, they need to be killed. And also people that are not Muslims, also, if they won't convert, they need to be killed.
Well,
you know?
It doesn't like, well, you know, the Bible says a lot of weird things. Like if,
I know,
if you
but
grow
people
crop,
don't follow it the way these people do. You know what I'm saying?
Well,
I mean, that's literal.
I think terrorists are terrorists, and they're crazy and radical, and they're all horrible. They're all horrible.
Well, I can't argue with that, yeah. But, you know. And ISIS is a special case, too. You know, they're extremely extreme, but, yeah.
They are.
But, yeah, you know what? I really want to have like a heated argument with it. Maybe we'll bring a couple guests, and then we'll have like a heated conversation about Islam, because I think it's a topic we need to address, and we've said our views and stuff, you know. But I want to have like a discussion of like four people. Everybody say what they really think. I want to know where we stand, because from what I'm reading. You know, it doesn't jibe with some of the things that you say. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but that's what. So, what are you reading?
Well, I'm reading books on Islam.
Right,
on,
but
on
who's
the
writing
Quran,
those? But you read a book
Quran.
On Trump with like Roger Stone.
No, but that's okay. But then I expected it to be biased.
Oh, I see. Okay, but I think what we really need is a scholar who knows more than we do.
Okay, but I mean, don't you think we can bring like resources and stuff or sources where we can find this? I'll bring a book, okay, or two. And then we'll have to agree that the author is pretty objective. Okay, but I mean, if you have quotes from the Quran, how can you argue with that?
Because that's you can say saying. Quotes from like in the Bible, it says you can't grow two crops together or you stoned to death.
No, I understand, but that doesn't hurt anybody. You know what I'm saying?
It hurts the person who was the farmer.
No, well, it's not the same as terrorism. Come on, you put it in the same thing.
I don't think we have the knowledge enough. I would like a scholar to like, if we were going to have a discussion, I would only do it with someone who actually knows not only the background, the culture. I want to know someone
but
who knows
why?
Things.
Why?
Because so, then how? Then we're talking about things
but,
we don't
but
understand.
They would be biased too.
No, I'm talking.
Why? I mean, you're saying that everybody who writes a book would be biased?
No. Okay, I'm just saying so reading a book and then quoting it, I'd rather have someone that has some background in it.
But what does that mean? I mean, that he would interpret the Quran in one way and you would in another.
No,
who
like,
says they know
like a professor of Islam? That
right.
is an unbiased person.
I don't think so. I really don't.
Okay, then that's a problem, you know? That we can't get over, because okay. I won't have a discussion if we don't know enough about it.
Right.
That's like talking about French when we don't speak French.
Right, but I think we know enough, and I'm going to bring some sources.
I disagree
and I invite
with that.
You to bring some. I invite you to bring some. Well, I don't know, so don't put us together on the same thing, because I feel I know a lot about Islam. I don't know as much as I would love to, but I've read several books on ISIS, on the Quran.
I know,
on
but
Islam.
If you're not a Muslim, I'm not going to be interested in hearing what you have to say about the Quran necessarily. I want to hear what they have to say.
So you want to hear it from a Muslim?
I want to hear from a professor or someone who knows what they're talking about. I'm talking about a scholar.
Right.
Someone who has background. Yeah.
Okay.
Because I have no... I can't say that I can talk eloquently
but
on this discussion.
But why can't you research it yourself? I mean, don't you want to know?
If someone was going to discuss, like, Jews, for instance, wouldn't you want someone who's Jewish to be on that show?
Not necessarily.
Okay.
Not necessarily.
I think that's
really
bullshit.
Why?
Because that's
because,
dumb.
I mean, why?
Because why would we have a discussion about something that's so charged without having someone that's actually like knowledgeable about that topic?
No, but a Muslim is not. Well,
I'm not saying
know.
A Muslim. I'm just saying a scholar. I'm saying a scholar
okay.
in of Islam, so I could trust that they have a background of and. That would, I mean, there's, I could research
if you
and find
can,
someone.
Okay, yeah, if you can find
that's the only way I would actually have
okay,
an intelligent
so let's
discussion.
Find one that's not biased. We'll probably be able to tell by their opinions and by what they say if they're biased or not. You know?
Yeah, I mean, you just find
yeah,
like a teacher
there.
Or a professor. Yeah,
I'll put it out there on Facebook or something.
Good.
Maybe we'll find somebody.
Good. I'm ready. I just don't want to be having it with just us, because that's ludicrous.
No, not really. I mean, we look. We're not here to teach. We're here to exchange opinions, I think.
But
mostly.
I don't think my opinions are based in enough foundational...
I respect your opinions. I think you know
enough
to
I don't
know
enough about Islam and Quran to okay. back up certain... I just don't.
Okay.
I know some stuff about... Like, I don't know enough.
Right. So you want proof. You want evidence.
Yeah, and I don't think it's fair, because I'd really want to have someone... Like, for instance, when I went to Michigan and we had a class on religion, and it
right.
was an unbiased opinion on Judaism, Islam, and Christianity. That kind of a professor I'd like to have on.
Right.
That's who I'm talking about.
Okay.
Who has a knowledge of has a knowledge of religion and a knowledge of the world, because I am just talking about the surface.
Right.
So that's what I'd prefer.
Okay. Okay. Sounds good.
Yeah.
I see. I think a friend of the show is calling, but I don't want to take it because I think the guest is going to call
guest.
In just a moment. So I think this is Casey. Let me see. But I'm taking a chance here.
Oh, no.
So I don't know. Okay. But I tell you what, let's go ahead and take the call. Good morning. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning, Sam.
Oh, good morning. How are you?
I'm okay. We got okay. the right time and the right date.
Yes, sir. Judge Herb Dodell, thank you for calling in. In fact, I was hesitant to take this call because the number seems similar to a friend of the show that often calls in, and I didn't want to take it in that call before you called in. So, but luckily, you see, you got to take risks sometimes in life, and when you do, you're often rewarded. So there you are.
That's true, but it also helps to be prepared and understand what you're doing.
Absolutely. There you go. Mr. Herb Dodell, you're a judge, and you wrote a book, but let's talk a little bit about, so are you still practicing judgeness or...
I never heard it referred to that way.
I know.
Yes, I'm still sitting as a judge pro tem. Yes, I am.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. So tell us a little bit about that. How long have you been a judge?
I was appointed by the presiding judge in 2008, so I've been sitting almost 9 years, and I've heard about 10,000 cases.
Wow. Let me ask you a question.
That's because we have a big calendar. So some days... For example, one time I was sitting in Inglewood, oh, it's probably about 2 months ago, and I had 86 cases in one day.
Oh, my God.
Wow.
So that's unusual. That really is unusual. It averages about 40 cases a day.
Wow.
So let me ask you this, Judge.
40 cases a day.
That's a lot. So, I mean, do people get their deserved time and attention when you go through that many?
Not really.
Right.
I think there's an inequity in it, but it sounds more than what it really is because a lot of those cases are no appearances. The cases get dismissed.
I see.
Right.
Okay.
Some of them, the parties have settled it. Sometimes only one party appears, and we do what they call a prove-up. If the plaintiff is there or the petitioner is there and the defendant is not, and those are relatively brief. But the truth of the matter is more complicated cases... a very limited amount of time.
Yeah.
10, 15 minutes.
Wow.
Although at the end of a calendar sometimes, what I try to do is I try to put the complicated ones at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And then sometimes I have a half hour, 45 minutes, I can give them a real trial.
Yeah, right.
Which is what they're really entitled to.
That's right. I'm from D.C., Your Honor, and I'm very into, my dad's an attorney, so judges are like rock stars in my family, so I'm very intimidated. But my question is, what did you, growing up, did you have a feeling you wanted to be a judge? When did you realize this would be the great career for me? Because it's so specific.
I know. I
well,
was
it's, not a
the
it's really not a career. And I was a trial lawyer. I guess I am a trial lawyer.
Yeah.
And did it for many, many years. And then an old friend of mine, a good friend of mine, who's a judge in Van Nuys, I was having lunch with him one day, and he was saying to me that they were short four judges. They were overwhelmed.
Hmm.
And would I volunteer? So I said, what do I have to do? Well, you got to take all these classes, the judge classes and all of that. You have to make an application. You have to have certain qualifications. Then you have to be reviewed by the Superior Court. All of them, they all get a letter to see whether or not you meet the standards. And then the presiding judge appoints you on a basis that I'm subject to his or her whim, actually.
Wow.
But usually the appointment is 3 years, and it gets renewed every 3 years. And that's what I've been doing.
Wow.
Very interesting. So is this something you always wanted to do? I mean, is it?
No.
No, huh?
No,
I mean, is
no,
it,
no,
what
no,
did
it,
you...
It, what? It came upon me as a result of a conversation.
I know, I understand that. I understand that. But as far as law itself, I guess I should clarify. As far as law, wanting to be a lawyer, is this something you wanted to do? Or is this something that, let's say, you were directed by your parents? Like Tori said, you know, her parents wanted her to be a lawyer.
Oh, yeah.
Well, actually, in the first part of the introduction to the book, I start off by talking about the fact that my relative said I should be a lawyer because I had a big mouth. And I like to argue.
That's what my dad said about me.
That's where it started. I was about 5 years old and went through it, but never really. I was offered a full-time judge position many times, at least a half a dozen times, and I never really wanted it because, to put it bluntly, they could send you to traffic court where you could sit from 9 to 5 every day listening to red light tickets, and it didn't seem inspirational to me, and it certainly didn't pay much. I had been in the county system. I had been a deputy district attorney many years earlier, so I had some familiarity with the bureaucracy of it.
Yeah,
this was a great opportunity because I get to sit 2-3 days a week, and I get assignments every month, and I can pretty much pick where I want to go. And they send me to places like Antelope Valley and Long Beach, which I don't love, but they do send me there, and I do go, in exchange for which I get assignments in Van Nuys and downtown and Santa Monica, places that I prefer. So it's a very good arrangement for me, and it's a great arrangement for the county.
Right. Now, where do you find time to write a book? Because, you know, we're going to talk to you about a book in just a moment, but where did you find the time to write a book?
Well, I started to write it about 7 years ago as I was experiencing these great stories in the court, the cases and things. And I had a lot of years of experience. I had tried over 95 jury trials and had a lot of experience. And I said, it's time to give back to the community. I've been very blessed by it. It was the law business was very good. And I said, it's time to give it back to the community with experience and share my knowledge and help the people through the system, because most people have no clue when they get caught up in the legal system.
What's going on?
They get taken advantage of, and the big guys beat the little guys. And I said, maybe this should be some way of telling the public so that they understand what the system is really all about, the pitfalls of it, and the expectations and things of that nature. Because if you're aware of things and you know what the likelihood is, that how it's going to end, you're much less stressed.
Right.
Much less anxious because you know, this is what might happen to me. If I need a lawyer, how do I get one?
Right.
What do I ask him or her? How do I do it? It's really a what do you do if.
It's a what do you do if.
Writing it, and it kept getting more and more and more. And I finally said, okay, this is it for now. And finished it up, and it's been doing really well. It's on Amazon and
amazing,
getting great reviews, which it really deserves, because it really is very personal. You know, one of the comments was, the reader thought I was sitting in the living room talking to them directly.
Well, that's
which
perfect.
Is a pretty nice compliment.
Yeah.
It really is, you know, and there you go. I mean, this is, you know, how the legal system works directly from a judge, you know?
Yeah, from the trench to the bench is the name of the book. And I have to say, I was just on jury duty, and the amount of I was on jury duty 3 days ago. The amount of anxiety in the room, not only by the jurors, but the defendant, because they have no idea what's going on. It's a whole other language. Man, if this could be given to people in that situation, it would be very helpful, I imagine.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, for example, you might have to go to small claims court. People say, okay, small claim, what do I do? Well, what we do is we explain to them, based on the fact you can't have a lawyer in small claims court.
Mm.
So you learn how to work the system, how to be prepared, what to expect, what the judges will or won't do. Should you settle? What happens if you lose? How do you collect it? All of these things are unknown to the public.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so in a very, I like to think of it as a hands-on way, we explain to them based on the experience, and I use actual cases. Some of them are very entertaining, as a matter of fact. Some of them we can roll over. I've seen stuff in the courtroom.
You wouldn't believe.
Well, especially in restraining, I do restraining orders. I preside over restraining order court, and I do all the hearings. And you would be surprised what people will come in with. And I roll over. I can't do too much, because I was told one time when I was making light of it, the administrator called me and said, you know, we didn't appoint you to be Judge Judy. So I gotta be a little. I gotta be a little cool. But I use levity in the courtroom.
You have to. Yeah.
I get supported because most people have no legal experience.
Right.
And all of a sudden they're in a room and they don't know what's happening and what's going to happen and what can they expect, and they're anxious. So I make a little speech before I take the bench. When I take the bench, and I try to make people feel a little better and more comfortable. Winners or losers, I like for them to believe that they got a fair shot.
Yeah.
I have no biases. I have no dog in the fight. And basically, we're there to do justice, and that's what we're supposed to do.
There you go.
One of my favorite cases is Gideon v. Wainwright, which is about basically
remember Gideon.
Yeah. So Gideon is, I want to name my firstborn Gideon for this, which is, but it's about an indigent who didn't know enough about the law, but knew that, like, he didn't know enough about the law that he wanted a lawyer. And basically, after this, it was, you know, everyone got the right to an attorney in certain respects. And I can't imagine not knowing. I grew up in the law. I went to the Supreme Court. I've seen cases. But imagine you've never seen anything and a guy or girl with a robe comes in and sits down in this big desk. It just must be so intimidating. And I wish that this was given to, like, everyone who gets arrested immediately or gets, like, who I just feel like this is so important. I really enjoy. I like that you did this.
Well, you know, I have a chapter on DUI cases in there. I've been a DA and I'm familiar with the system because I had done civil and criminal litigation. And so I thought, well, what do? You get arrested. You're sitting in a jail. It's 2:00 in the morning. And what do? Who do you call?
Yeah.
Can you call anybody?
Right.
What are your obligations? What are the ramifications if you do or you don't do something?
Right. What questions do I ask?
Being warned in advance as to what you can expect and how to deal with it. And there are lawyers that advertise everywhere, and they don't always tell you the truth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're looking for the business, and do you really need to spend the kind of money that they're asking for? Are they going to do things that are really necessary, or are they just going to run up the bill? Lawyers are known to do that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so the chapter on criminal law is for those people who are exposed to the system for the first time and have no clue as to how to deal with it. You know, what about bail? You know, what is that really? What does it cost me?
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a hands-on book. If you get served with a restraining order, what's the ramifications? What do you do under the circumstances? Do you need a lawyer? It's all explained in a very hands-on way. The stories are all true cases.
Mm. Right.
Nothing's made up. And it gives you a sense of what to expect.
Wow. From the church? The church? Okay, you'd say it because
The trench to the bench.
I've got a frog in my mouth. From the trench to the bench. Judge, I wanted to ask you something I've always been curious about with judges, because you come from a background where you met a lot of lawyers, you went to school with many attorneys and stuff. Isn't there ever a concern that you'll have a certain bias when there's a certain attorney on the case, when you know them, let's say, better than other attorneys? And I'm not saying you, I'm saying judges in general.
I can't speak for all my colleagues, but I can say that in all the 9 years that I've been on the bench, I never let that get in the way. I've ruled in favor of people I didn't like. I've ruled against people that I did like. I never let it get in my way, ever.
Yeah. So you really
it's
have
tough
to,
sometimes.
Yeah.
It's tough sometimes. Some people are really obnoxious, and they push all your buttons.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's about applying the law, and that's what we're supposed to do, and I would like to think that my colleagues do the same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you want. You want an unbiased opinion of a judge that can hold down the courtroom. But you get so worried about, you know, everything else. And it's like the unbiased has to be the number one thing in a judge, I think.
Yeah. And the amount of responsibility, right? Because, I mean, Tori was talking about this, you know, having people's fate in your hands. That's a lot of responsibility.
Well, you know, I tell the people, and when I do small claims court, I tell the people, you know, you want to gamble on what I'm going to decide, or do you want to go out in the hall and try to get it settled?
Yeah,
and
that's
I tell
good.
Them why it makes sense to settle, and I've got a new technique that I've been using for about 6 months now.
Uh-huh.
I started using it. I sit in Ventura County also, and I've been using it, and it's been very effective, and it deals basically with making a deal if you're a defendant to avoid judgment on your record, which affects your credit.
Mm.
So what I do... I offer the following. I'll dismiss the case without prejudice, meaning if one party doesn't perform according to the terms of an agreement, the court retains jurisdiction and we can enforce it. So if you're good about it and you honor the terms of your settlement, then I'll structure it to pay it out over a long period of time and things of that nature. There's no judgment, and therefore your credit is not adversely affected. Mm. You were going to pay it anyway.
That's true.
And instead of being forced to pay it right then and there, or run the risk of having a garnishment or writ of execution or something else, they get terms.
Mm.
And I've been settling a lot of cases. It's been working out real well, because otherwise, to answer your question, yeah, it's a big risk. You don't know what side of the bed I got up on that morning.
Yeah.
And you don't know
Jeez
anything
Louise.
About me. You don't know what I'm going to do. So why do you want to take a chance?
Yeah, my God. What if they're grumpy? What if they didn't get their coffee? What if there's so many things?
Oh, well, you know. But I don't let that get in my way.
Yeah,
personally.
Right. No, yeah. Of course not.
It's, to me, they're all different, and each party's entitled to a fair shake, and I give it to them as best I can.
Yeah. There you go. You see, and that's why we have people like you as judges, you know, because you are fair, you're intelligent, you know what you're doing, and you understand the responsibility, you know. And so, I mean, I'm going to read this book because it fascinates me now
too,
that
me
we
too.
Talked about it. I'm thinking, God, all these things I really don't know anything about that I would like to know, like small claims, you know, things with the business and stuff. Sometimes, you know, your first instinct is like, I'm going to take him to court.
Right.
But then you know, and the judge is always there to tell you, try and settle it yourself, you know.
It's like a parent. It's like two kids who are squabbling.
You know?
Try and settle this yourself and I'll dismiss the punishment.
Yeah.
It's a good idea.
One of the things I did in the book was I added a spiritual component. So throughout the book, whether you're a person or a business, I talk about what your options are, not only from the legal standpoint, win, lose, and the rest, but how you should respond to lawsuits and what's really involved. Like, small claims is different because it's about money.
Mm.
But restraining order cases, there is no money involved other than potential attorney's fees.
Right.
And so they're all there for their ego.
Oh.
I don't like you, I'll get even with you. And that's very self-defeating.
Mm.
You're bringing negative energy into your life, and you're bringing chaos into your life, when a lot of times you can resolve it without having to go that far.
Yeah.
I give you some ideas of how I think you can do it. It seems to work for some people. It depends on your attitude and your consciousness. What do you really want out of this?
Yeah.
Lawsuits are not good for your health.
No.
No.
My God, no. My dad was a litigator.
I've seen people, it becomes part of their life. It's all they do. That's
right.
All they can think about.
Yeah.
And it drags them down.
I'll sue you. I'll sue you.
It brings all kinds of negativity in their lives. They get sick over it. Litigation is not good for anybody.
No, my dad did litigation for one case, and he said, no, thank you.
Really?
And said, I'll do contract law from now on.
Yeah, but
well, it is adversarial. And in fact, that's the difference between the trench and the bench. When I was in the trench, everything is a fight.
Right.
The other side is always fighting. They
that's
got motivations,
right.
And it becomes very adversarial. The thing about the bench, which makes the book a little different, is because I'm talking about it from a judge's perspective,
right,
as opposed to what lawyers are telling you. The fact of the matter is that it's less adversarial because I have no motivation
other than
to do the right thing. So to me, it's so much better and much more relaxing for me.
Right.
A whole lot different than out there fighting every day.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Much better. And you get the cool robe.
Well, my kids bought me the robe when I first got appointed.
Wow.
That's
had a plaque that they put, you know, that you put on the bench.
Yeah.
So my kids decided to do that.
That is awesome.
I think about it.
I'd love to
I have it in the car. I carry it around.
That's so cool.
Last week I got in a call on a Wednesday and said, can you cover Pasadena tomorrow morning? They called me at 5 o'clock.
Oh my God.
Desperate. The judge was either sick or whatever it was. And so I got the robe in the car, you know. Yeah, sure.
You're like a superhero. You put your cape on and you're ready to go.
This is cool.
Well, that's nice. I like that.
That's
I wear
good.
It at costume parties.
Yeah.
There you go. Judge Herb Dodell, can you tell us where people can find more about you and the book?
Well, the book is available on Amazon, and I got a website that somebody created for me. It's called Trench to the Bench.com. And it'll tell you all about history and articles, and there's a video on there. We actually shot a real case in the courtroom. We used actors because I really couldn't get the litigants to do it.
Right.
But there's a real life case on the website.
It shows you
what a restraining order case is about.
That's so interesting.
It was fun. Actually, I enjoyed it.
Wow. Sounds cool. And
Jerry Springer without the chairs. That's how I describe it.
There you go. So, Judge, what's in the future for you? Are you going to write more books? Where do you see yourself going from here?
Well, I'm writing a sequel.
Oh.
On the things that I didn't get in the first book, because it would have gone on and on and on and on. And I'm hoping to be able to do some lecturing and help bring the experience to the people so that they're better prepared, better educated, and less stressed.
Yes.
Wow. So that's the goal.
Yeah. Less stress. There you go.
Knowledge is power, people. I'm serious. Knowledge is power.
Yes. And judges are wise people, from my experience. So there you go. You
not
know.
Always.
Well, not always.
Talk about some judges you don't want to have in front of. I can tell you that I remember them real well. And that's the risk of litigation.
Yeah.
You don't know who you're going to get.
You don't know. That's right.
You get one of these guys or gals, and you don't want to be there.
Yeah. Yeah. What if you don't get this cool,
that's
you know,
right.
gentleman?
You don't get a cool judge.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Judge, thank you so much for joining us this morning. You're a lot of
fun.
Such
an honor.
I'm getting this book.
It was
I'm telling
a pleasure.
You.
Honor, you can forget about the word honor. People used to say they call you Your Honor.
Yeah.
You hear it for about the first 2 days. After that, you don't even hear it. Truly, you don't hear it anymore. And I don't have a gavel either.
Oh, there's
I know there's one on the desk because I saw one a couple of weeks ago, but we don't use gavel.
I would love to use that gavel. I think I'm dramatizing the whole situation.
Yeah, you are. I
well,
told
no,
you. You watch
hey,
a lot
look,
of TV.
The best job I ever had. I must say.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Most people say that you get paid. I said, no, I don't get paid, but I get paid in satisfaction.
There you go. That's all you
no
need.
No price for satisfaction.
There you go.
Wow, amazing!
Good for you.
Amazing. Well, thank you for calling in yet once again, everybody. Please get the book.
From Trench to the Bench.
From the Trench to the Bench. And you
well,
can find it.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and to the public and. If anybody has any questions, they can contact me through the website or whatever Amazon has, and I'll be happy to respond.
Awesome.
Sounds good. And I'm getting the book for sure. I love the stuff. Really.
So it worked out this morning. I made a sale or two.
There you go. At least one. There you go.
I'm on.
Okay.
I'm on board.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
All the best. Bye-bye to you.
Smart.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, how can you argue with a judge?
And what if you're, let's say you're in that situation, if you had just read the book, you would know so much more. You'd be
right.
So much more prepared.
Right.
Yeah. That's good.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I think that's really, I think it's like a different language when you go into the courtroom. Completely different language.
Right.
You don't, is the defendant
that's
or,
why
you
they
have
tell
no
me,
idea.
Don't do it yourself.
Oh my
right?
God. Just stop talking and get a lawyer. Because it's as if asking you to speak Portuguese and you're like, yeah, I can do that. No,
that's
no,
true,
you can't.
Right?
No, you can't.
Yeah, I mean, you incriminate yourself for 2 seconds.
You have no idea.
Probably,
yeah, just don't
right?
do it. Just don't do it.
Yeah, just
exactly.
shut up.
Just be quiet. Miranda v. Arizona was made for a reason, and Miranda v. Arizona led to what you know now as Miranda rights.
Right.
And there's a right to an attorney, and you should take that right. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the one for... that you have the right to remain silent and
correct.
All that stuff.
And that you have the right to basically be given your rights. Because
right.
if you don't know if you're being detained or not. And the whole question is, when am I detained? So that's another question. If you're ever caught, I'm such a nerd right now.
No, I wouldn't know that.
If you're ever caught, you can have to simply ask, am I allowed to go at any time? Am I being detained or am I free to go at any time? Mm. If they say you're being detained... then you are allowed an attorney.
Okay.
But if they say you're free to go at any time or we're not holding you, then if any time you're uncomfortable, you can just go.
Really?
Just go.
Okay.
But keep asking, am I being detained? Am I being detained?
Right.
Over and over and over again if you have to.
Really?
And if they're not answering you, just keep asking because if you are being detained, then the law from Miranda v. Arizona is that you do get an attorney.
Right. Because then you're dealing with the cops.
You're dealing, once you've been detained, you're correct.
Right.
You're in their possession, basically.
Right.
Correct.
Wow.
But even if you're not handcuffed.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're not handcuffed, simply ask, am I being detained or am I free to go on my own will?
Right,
you know, if you're confused, ask that over and over again.
There you go. You see, you need to write a book just about that one.
I know. That's a big one. Right? I know.
Yeah.
Such a big one.
But yeah, I mean, people don't understand that, you know. Thankfully, I haven't had to deal with policemen my whole life, mm-hmm. you know, so I'm happy about
yeah.
that.
You know? And, you know, they can lie to you if you're being questioned by the police. It's absolutely within their right to lie.
Yeah.
And say they have evidence and stuff that's
absolutely.
So,
right?
Yeah. I mean, being coerced is not, yeah. it's very different if you're a cop. You
exactly.
have more rights. So just get someone that knows what they're doing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Deception. I mean, they can do that. That's
yeah.
not illegal.
And a lawyer will know that and knows how to play the game. So
really?
Don't play, yeah. Oh, yeah. So then don't play it with your hands tied behind the back. Like, get someone who knows how to play the game.
Yeah.
You know?
Hire Tori. I nominate you for my attorney. No, really.
I want to walk in with an empty briefcase and, like, slam it on the thing and
yeah,
be like,
right?
I object.
Listen, I just think you need a few more years and then you'll find that this is where you belong. Because
maybe. My mom is always saying that.
You have the talent for it.
But that doesn't mean that
I have... And you have the... I don't know. I see passion, too.
I do. I love it. I love everything yeah. about it. Right. I don't love that, like, I'm saving someone, I guess.
But look, don't get into that then, that part of it.
Yeah.
Find something where maybe... So it's not like
it's not
murder.
Like, yeah, right.
Stuff
it's not
like
life or death.
You don't have to go
yeah,
like extreme.
I know. I know. I'm like,
start somewhere else.
Maybe start a little slower.
Yeah.
Traffic
be
court.
Be like a divorce lawyer
yeah.
or something.
Divorce attorneys make bank.
I know, and it's interesting too.
You know, there's. I'm not going to tell the specifics of a case. I can't because my dad has confidentiality and all that stuff. But it did come down to in a contract with two big. They were getting divorced, but they had a big company they had to split with. My dad was helping with the contract, and it came down to two items in their household. Let's just say,
oh my god,
like a tea kettle. From the family, and it millions and millions and millions, and it came down to this tea kettle, let's say. It wasn't
wow.
the tea kettle, but it was something like that, okay?
Yeah.
And my dad, being the smartest attorney in the world, was like this. How about this? They couldn't get it a deal. They were ready to sign. It took years. They were ready, and it came down to this effing tea kettle.
Oh, my God.
And so my dad said, how about this? We write in that I get the tea kettle for 1 year. And then we revisit after we've all calmed down after the 1 year and see what happens. So they said, all right, fine. So Jerry gets to keep the tea kettle, right? So we put it in. Within a year, no one even remembered the tea kettle. Mm. It was just that they were furious and it was about that. So he took it out of the situation.
Right.
And so we have the tea kettle.
Diffused
at home.
It, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, what
yeah.
a story.
So it's smart. You got to think like that.
You
but,
really do. You see, yeah. that's why they're lawyers, man.
Yeah.
They're smarter than
No, you're
than
right.
Most
divorce
people.
Would be. But I would also think that's so like. I don't know, maybe may put me in a bad place with love and everything. I don't know. I think divorce would be kind of cool, actually.
It would, right?
Yeah.
I think so. Like prenups, you know, things like that, you
yeah.
know, seeing people like... But it would be... I mean, look, but there's downsides to it. I mean, imagine you seeing children being...
Yeah,
like,
I mean, like, that is horrible.
Pawn and
I have
stuff
to cross-examine a 10-year-old or something, you
yeah,
know?
You know?
Yeah, that's horrible.
So, but look, you have plenty of time to think about it, Tori.
I know. I want to be Amal Clooney. She's a human rights attorney.
Ah.
That's who's
go.
Good.
See?
Yeah.
Yeah, be an advocate for women.
Yeah, that's what I would want to do.
There's a million
do.
Things you can
yeah.
do in law, really.
Yeah.
You don't have to defend the murderers. You really don't.
I know. I'm all worried about defending OJ. You're like, you don't have to start there.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm like, but I couldn't do it.
And you may not want to be there.
No,
you know?
I would probably want to be, my dad would kill me, but he's a defense litigator, but
yeah.
I'd be a prosecution.
Prosecutor?
Yeah, we'd go up against each other.
That's very cool, though. I love
yeah.
that. I love that. I love that you have educated parents.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because
yeah.
my parents were not. They came from the old school. My mom was a homemaker all her life.
Nice.
My dad did manual work.
Nice.
Although he had his own business and stuff and did very well. But it was not... he never went to college because they came from times where you couldn't. I mean,
right.
you had to go and work
yeah.
at 15, 16.
This was survival.
You know how much poverty there was in Israel in the 40s? I can't even tell you.
When did Israel become
30s, an Israeli? In 1948.
Okay, so that's
yeah.
so late. Oh, my God.
Right. So there was a British mandate there. There were mixed Arabs and Israelis, or Jews, whatever you want to call them, before 48. And... they weren't getting along at all. There was a lot of violence, and you see many of the people, like, they were immigrants, you know. So imagine this. Both my dad's from Greece, and my mom's from Iraq, actually.
Wow.
And And they both had to leave. Now, imagine my mom in Iraq. They were like not in Baghdad. Remember Basra?
Yeah, when, Basra, yeah.
Basra,
yeah,
right? Yeah, yeah. Okay, Basra it is. At the during the Gulf War.
Oh God, yeah.
And so she was born and grew up there until she was 14. They smuggled them out of there because there was so much anti-Semitism.
Wow.
That they smuggled them at night. They had to leave all their belongings behind.
Oh my God.
They just took the clothes on their bodies and they flew them over to Israel. She was 14 years old, and they had to live in like. In like camps, like kind of like you know, like the refugees do now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, something like
that.
She
was a refugee.
Yeah, in a way.
Wow.
You know, and then my dad, there wasn't that kind of persecution when he came in 34, but his dad already foresaw when he saw the rise of Nazism, you know.
And that's right when it was starting.
Right.
34.
My dad was born in 33.
Yeah.
And what happened is my grandpa decided he's going to leave and immigrate to Israel. So he and his brother and a couple of the family did. The ones that remained back were all slaughtered.
Of course.
You know? So that was in Greece.
That's just an intuition of something's coming up and I got to get out of here.
And I got to get out of here, you know? And then later my dad does the same thing, although we're not refugees from Israel, but he somehow wanted to get us out of there because he felt there was a better opportunity here.
Yeah. So it's always about that intuition. That's so interesting.
I guess, right? I don't know. I'm happy that I'm here.
Yeah, of course you are.
Yeah.
And you're owning your own business. I mean, this is the dream that I think probably your grandfather felt for you.
Yeah, you know, and we were able to bring my parents here. Now they're here with us.
Yeah, this is the dream. Yeah. I mean, that's, I think people all over the world would kill to be able to do
that.
To
be in America, right?
And to have that, your family with you, to bring them over. Amazing.
I know. Amazing. Amazing stuff. So this is still, I think, the land of opportunity. And people can do. I remember they used to call it, at least when I was a kid, the land of unlimited opportunities.
Yes.
You know?
I think people have a really cynical view right now of what's going on. I think it still is land of opportunities. It's just we're having a rough time politically, I think. But this happens with America. It goes through it up and down, up and
but
down.
But you notice that we move on.
You
we don't
back.
Stop
yeah,
our lives,
exactly.
You know?
In fact, the worst parts of it, when we get really bad like this, when it's so polarized, usually the next step is coming together. So hopefully
we have to, right? Yeah. We have to bounce back.
Well, we all came together to hate that Pepsi ad with Kendall Jenner.
Yeah, right.
So that worked out great. The world stopped hating each other and all came together and hated that one thing together. So that worked out.
Yeah, right.
It was a really insensitive ad. It's not good.
No.
Yeah.
Many people call it tone deaf.
Everyone. I mean, it was not, you could hate someone, but they'd both be like, yeah, now that ad was bad. He's like, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Everyone hated it. And it was. It was so bizarre.
But they thought, I guess people sat in a room, all yes people.
And know this, they did not hire an ad agency, which is interesting. Pepsi did this in-house.
Really?
So if you had an ad agency, they would never have done this.
You see, you need someone objective. You
Again,
can't do
everything the lesson of today is find someone that's smarter than you about it and do it. If you want a judge, you get an attorney, all that. You get someone smarter than you.
Yeah.
Because this happens.
Yeah.
Wow. And you look like a joke. I mean, Coca-Cola just got booming and like the stocks went way up.
Good. I hate Pepsi anyway.
You're like too sugary. I just can't imagine they thought this. No one person was like, ooh.
Yeah.
You know, at one point, you know that the ad is she's doing a modeling shoot and the Black Lives Matter march goes by or protest. And Kendall Jenner rips off her blonde wig and joins the protest, ends up getting a Pepsi and taking it to the riot cop. Mm. He drinks it and everyone claps and hugs. So if you do it in slow motion, someone pointed this out on Twitter. She takes off her wig, ready to join the movement, and hands it to her black lady assistant. It could not be so stupid. I mean, it was just so stupid.
Really?
So someone's like, I can't believe they took the picture of it. She just doesn't even look at her and hands her the wig. And I'm like, I love that this is supposed to empower black women by handing her her wig as her assistant.
Oh, so bad.
It's just tone deaf everywhere.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Wow.
So we all hated that. So that's something we all have in common.
It's true, I guess. Yeah. I didn't have any opinion about it. I didn't really see it. I should.
Yeah, because you'd be like, wait, what?
Yeah, right.
It's,
no, but just based on what you told me and what I read.
It's very strange.
Yeah, it is.
Even what's
crazy.
Strange, too, is when she hands the riot cop the Pepsi, a riot cop is not going to drink. He takes it, looks around at his other customers, like, yeah.
Yeah.
Clicks it open. What? And then everyone just hugs.
But you know what? If it was... look, under different situations, people would probably like it. But we're so charged right now.
Well,
it's the last thing you want. I mean, because think about it. It's like the ideal world that they're showing in commercials.
Yeah,
remember,
but
I'd like to teach the world to sing.
No, now that I understand is an ideal world. But this was so specific about the Black Lives Matter protest. The signs were the same. The people were the same. I mean, they emphasized it as just so much. And Kendall looks interested. And then for her to have saved the day, this sort of famous person for no reason as a model by giving a Pepsi soda on a very complicated issue was kind of insulting. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
It was just a little bit bizarre.
Oh, well.
So they put it down. They took it down. They apologized. And they Pepsi has apologized to Kendall Jenner publicly for saying she had nothing to do with this idea. So it went backfired really bad.
Don't you think she should have said something?
I think so. Also, Kris Jenner, who's the manager of all the Kardashians, who I always have said from the beginning is actually really, really smart because all five of her children are billionaires for different reasons. She should have seen this one as a bad idea. This was just no one overlooked this. This was bad from the beginning.
This was about being with Pepsi and making the money.
Someone should have, she should have seen this and said no, because I'm sure she's done that before with other things, and this should have been a no.
Anyway, folks, we are out of time. Thank you all for joining us. We want to thank Judge Herb Dodell for calling in. I mean, I'm getting this book, Trench to the Bench.
From the Trench to the Bench.
And get it on Amazon and everywhere else that books are sold. I did want to mention, I said to you, I'm working on creating an app only for the show. So if you like it and you want your people to listen, your friends, whatever, you definitely need to get the word out there, okay?
We're starting to get, we're going to get big, y'all. We're going to get real big.
I want to, like, so we're going to have an app, not just LA Talk Radio, but this show alone. We're going to have all the archives going back 9 years and live feed of the show in the morning and then replays all day. So you can't say you don't get enough of us.
Right?
There you go.
We're going to be shoved down your throat.
Either it's too narcissistic of me, or I'm making it easy for people. I don't know. But somebody's got to do it. Then. Somebody's got to promote yourself. You know what I'm saying?
Hey, it's like, when I'm out here, I feel like a whore out here. You got to really be, you got to really promote yourself. You're right.
Yeah. I mean,
look at me.
Everybody's a celebrity.
You know how many shots I take before I get the good one and then act like it was candid?
Yeah, I know. All right, everybody. Tori, thanks a lot.
Anytime.
See you tomorrow.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Tori, only on LA Talk Radio.